Okay. On hold. Okay, great. Okay, so we are kicking off, as Chuck said, a series on Advent. We're technically a week early, just for the record. But I'm not here next week, and as Chuck mentioned, we're going to do a, breakfast as a group. Come on, baby. Don't do this to me. There it is. Okay. don't want to all of a sudden put it on their TV, just for the record. Do it. Yeah, right. Okay. So, there it is. Okay, and here's the other thing I've figured out is that some of the formatting actually didn't come through on the my goodness. Come on, baby. There you go. Didn't come through, so there are a couple of couple of things that are blank, so I'll walk you through those in just a second. So Advent, right? Very much a time or a season of waiting. It's really about preparation. And so hopefully you can see all this. Once again, I apologize. Just some basics, right? Advent, and I think we've talked a little bit about this. I personally did not grow up in a liturgical home. So it's all very new to me, the whole liturgical calendar. So I like to take a step back and look at, well, what is it, right? What is Advent? So technically it's 4 Sundays before Christmas Day. Normally Christmas or before Christmas Eve, but when Sunday falls on a Christmas Eve, then that's counted as part of Advent, just for the record. So this year it runs from next Sunday for 4 Sundays through December 24th, you'll notice that there, I think what we all know is there's a wreath that we light candles for, right? And there are 5 candles on those, on the wreath, and normally they are purple, or they can also be blue, and then pink and white, with white being the Christ candle, and it is lit basically on Christmas Day, or if Advent doesn't fall on Christmas Eve, it's lit on Christmas Eve. Does that make sense? So, and I think Jace has been doing that the last couple of years, where he has a family go up. I think you guys participated, right? Yeah, didn't burn the house down or anything. Yeah, right, exactly. So anyway, so that's kind of Advent, right? That's what the liturgical calendar is really about. And I think we talked a little bit about this when we went through Lent. If you all remember, there were times of waiting, times of feasting, right? This Advent is a preparation as we begin to move forward in preparing for the coming of Christ, right? And so we'll get into some of that and what that means. So this is, I don't know if anybody's ever read this or used this book called Waiting on the Word. It's a book by Malcolm Guite, and it's a poem a day for Advent, Christmas, and Epiphany. And it's actually quite good, right? You can just read it as you're going through Advent, if you like poetry. But he starts out this book that I think in a great kind of introduction, right? Advent is a paradoxical season, a season of waiting and anticipation in which the waiting itself is strangely rich and fulfilling, a season that looks back at the people who waited in the darkness for the coming light of Christ, and yet forward to a fuller light still to come and illuminate our darkness. Advent falls in winter at the end of the year, in the dark and cold, but its focus is on the coming of light and life, when the Ancient of Days becomes a young child and says, "Behold, I make all things new." And that's also one of the reasons why you light candles, right, within the wreath, and that is about showing light in the darkness. That's kind of the symbolism from that. And so when you think about the historical context, and one of the things that I've been just been speaking to me over the last couple of years has been, okay, I need to take a step back and put myself in the mind of what was happening at the time. I think too many times we read things in the Bible and we apply our world today to it, when reality is, if we take a step back and think about what was happening during that time, it may actually be a little more impactful and understanding. So let's think about this, right? Israel, at this time, they have returned from exile from Babylon, and the Medo-Persian Empire was still ruling over Israel. The temple has been rebuilt, but there's 400 years of silence. Think about that. 400 years. No prophet. No word from the Lord, at least as far as we know, right? Nothing that was ever documented. And there just is no revelation happening. So if you are an Israelite and you know that God has promised, right? You know that God has promised something. He's promised a Messiah, but yet it's been 400 years. That's a very dark time. And I think that, to me, is kind of where Malcolm was going. And unfortunately, this is where one of the highlights didn't, well, I guess it did bold, where he says it's a season of waiting and anticipation, in which the waiting itself is strangely rich and fulfilling, a season that looks back at the people who waited in darkness for the coming light of Christ, and yet forward to a fuller light still to come and illuminate our darkness. So think about it, right? Yes, ma'am?
How many years were they in Egypt waiting again?
400 years.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there. Thank you, Crystal. Appreciate that. So, but you know, you think about that, right? You're waiting. The anticipation is there. Thus, even more reason why this is that meaningful. So there are actually four words that represent Advent, and this is where... Yes. No, I'm just kidding. This is where my formatting didn't go from this to my phone. There is hope, peace, joy, and love. And so my plan is that we're going to deep dive into each of those as we go forward. And we'll do two one day because I'm only going to be here three Sundays, but we'll go through that. So what I want to do now is we are going to use our friends at the Bible Project, and we are going to use their, cross your fingers, this works. We're going to use their video. We are going to use their video on hope. So let's see what happens. That's it, right? Okay.
You want to describe the feeling of anticipating a future that's better than the present. You might be giddy or excited or maybe unsure, but most of us know that experience. We call it hope. It's a state of anticipation, and it's crucial for healthy human existence. And it's a really important concept
sorry.
In the Bible. In fact, there are many experiences we call hope.
Golly, I tried to mess up. Here we go. There it is. This is what I want. Okay. Is that better? That's a little better, right? All right, let's start over. Here we go.
So let's say you want to describe the feeling of anticipating a future that's better than the present. You might be giddy or excited or maybe unsure, but most of us know that experience. We call it hope. It's a state of anticipation, and it's crucial for healthy human existence. And it's a really important concept in the Bible. In fact, there are many words for hope in the ancient languages of the Bible, and they're all fascinating. In the Old Testament, there are two main Hebrew words translated as hope. The first is yachal, which means simply to wait for. like in the story of Noah and the ark, as the floodwaters recede, Noah had to yachal for weep. The other Hebrew word is kava, which also means to wait. It's related to the Hebrew word kav, which means cord. When you pull a kav tight, you produce a state of tension until there's release. That's kava, the feeling of tension and expectation while you wait for something to happen. The prophet Isaiah depicts God as a farmer who plants vines and kavas for good grapes. Or the prophet Micah talks about farmers who both kava and yachal for morning dew to give moisture to the land. So in biblical Hebrew, hope is about waiting or expectation. But waiting for what? In the period of Israel's prophets, as the nation was sinking into self-destruction, Isaiah said, "At this moment, the Lord's hiding his face from Israel, so I will kava for him." The only hope Isaiah had in those dark days was the hope for God himself. You find the same notion of hope all over the book of Psalms, where these words appear over 40 times. In almost every case, what people are waiting for is God. Like in Psalm 130, the poet cries out from a pit of despair, "I kava for the Lord, let Israel yachal for the Lord, because he's loyal and will redeem Israel from its sins." Biblical hope is based on a person, which makes it different from optimism. Optimism is about choosing to see, in any situation, how circumstances could work out for the best. But biblical hope is not focused on circumstances. In fact, hopeful people in the Bible often recognize there's no evidence things will get better, but you choose hope anyway. Like the prophet Hosea, he lived in a dark time when Israel was being oppressed by foreign empires, and he chose hope when he said God could turn this valley of trouble into a door of hope, like the day when Israel came up from the land of Egypt. God had surprised his people with redemption back in the days of the Exodus, and he could do so again. So it's God's past faithfulness that motivates hope for the future. You look forward by looking backward, trusting in nothing other than God's character. It's like the poet of Psalm 39 who says, "And now, O Lord, what else can I kava for? You are my yachal." In the New Testament, the earliest followers of Jesus cultivated this similar habit of hope. They believed that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection was God's surprising response to our slavery to evil and death. The empty tomb opened up a new door of hope, and they used the Greek word elpis to describe this anticipation. The Apostle Peter said that Jesus' resurrection opened up a living hope. That people can be reborn, to become new and different kinds of humans. More than once, the Apostle Paul says, the good news about Jesus announces the elpis of glory. In both cases, this elpis is based on a person, the risen Jesus, who has overcome death. And this hope wasn't just for humans. The apostles believed that what happened to Jesus in the resurrection was a foretaste of what God had planned for the whole universe. In Paul's words, it's a hope that creation itself will be liberated from slavery to corruption into freedom when God's children are glorified. So Christian hope is bold, waiting for humanity and the whole universe to be rescued from evil and death. And some would say it's crazy, and maybe it is. But biblical hope isn't optimism based on the odds. It's a choice to wait for God to bring about a future that's as surprising as a crucified man rising from the dead. Christian hope looks back to the risen Jesus in order to look forward. And so we wait. That's what the biblical words for hope are all about.
It is good, isn't it? Those guys really just do, I think, some amazing stuff. So, let's look at Psalm 130 for a second. Come on, baby. Out of the depths, I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, Lord, kept record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you, there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning, more than watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins. So, I guess my question is, right, what is it about the psalmist? What is it about God that brings the psalmist relief? Forgiveness, right? Forgiveness of sin.
redemption. You know, what do you think would happen if the psalmist didn't wait for healing and forgiveness? Despair. Distraught, yeah, despair, right? Makes sense. So one of the quotes from the video is about biblical hope that I thought was really interesting. And that is, and I don't know about you guys, I feel like I'm an optimist. I'm an optimistic person. I tend to look at things kind of glass half full rather than glass half empty. But this really resonated with me of what is the difference. That biblical hope is based on a person, which makes it different from optimism. Optimism is about choosing to see in any situation how circumstances could work out for the best. But biblical hope isn't focused on circumstances. In fact, hopeful people in the Bible often recognize there's no evidence things will get better, but you choose hope anyway. Let's go back to the historical situation that we're dealing with. Right? I mean, the Israelites don't have a lot of hope. They've been 400 years of nothing. You know, you think about that. You think about when John the Baptist arrives and starts preaching the gospel or the coming of Christ. I mean, that, you know, you've got four generations of people. I mean, that's the other thing to remember. People aren't living until they're 400, right? You've got this passed down from one or the other. And so, I don't know. I look at this as it's very intriguing to me that there was this hope, this element of hope, and it's based on a person, not the circumstances. And how many times do we base our lives, if you will, or our attitudes or our walk on our circumstances and not necessarily on the person of Christ? It's so easy to do. Okay, so as we do that, right, where does that start to come into play? Oh, is this going to show? Yeah, I guess a little bit. I thought what was very interesting to me was the fact that he comments on this a couple of times. It's about looking back in order to look forward. The Israelites were looking back on the story of Exodus, looking back on where God had been faithful to them in order to look forward. That's what gave them hope, right? That's what gave them hope. It's God's past faithfulness that motivates hope for the future. You look forward by looking backward, trusting in nothing other than God's character. And our ultimate hope, our living hope, is the resurrection of Christ. And so I think as we start going through Advent and preparing, as I like to say, or as I've read from others, carving out time, right? How do you carve out time in your day, in your week, to begin preparing for the hope of the coming Christ, of the celebration, of the feast? What does that actually look like? And I think that's what we need to try to do over the next week as Advent approaches, and during Advent, trying to be intentional from that perspective. So that is hope. That is what hope is about. So what I want to do in our last few minutes, can you see that? Is these are our questions, and we can break up into our groups. The first one is, what does it mean to have living hope? The second one, why is that so important for our Christian walk today? Why does he say that Christian hope is bold? Gee, I don't know if you heard that at the end of the video. Why do you think it's bold? And then last but not least, when we look back to the Christ, to the risen Christ, in order to look forward, are we doing that today? How can we use this time of Advent and our lives to look back at Christ? So I know that's a lot. We've got about 5-8 minutes, give or take, but let's try to break up real quick. and see if we can't talk through a few of these. And thank you for your patience with my technology. Can y'all read that? I can't make it any bigger, so. I might be able to zoom a little bit, yes. There we go, that's a little better. Is that better? Yeah. Thank you, Wes. What? I'm not giving you answers.